Blog Talk Radio.
And a runner at third, nobody out in the first and didn't score. Second and third, one out in the second and didn't score. Smith corks one into right down the line. It may go. Go crazy, folks. Go crazy. It's a home run, and the Cardinals have won the game by the score of 3-2 and a home run by the Wizard. Go crazy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the UCB podcast. I am your host this week, John Doble, and with me as always is the donkey to my Shrek, Kevin Reynolds. Kevin, how are you doing tonight?
Well, that wasn't very nice. Here I
am. Hey, donkey's a popular one.
To do the show with you, and you call me something like that. I don't know if I got it in me to partner with you any longer.
I almost did my faithful steed, but That brought to mind the scene from Shrek where Shrek saves Fiona and then he goes back for Donkey and he's like, I have to save my ass.
And there it was. It is way too late to be doing baseball podcasts. I just got to say that. This California baseball is for the birds, man.
Yeah, I tell you what, it's like late night there when we're on the West Coast.
Oh, man, and now I'm watching, I'm watching a game against the West Coast team because I just watched a commercial about fancy packaged organic tomatoes. Come on. If you're that committed to eating organic, you're deceiving yourself. That's a different discussion.
I don't have any fancy packaging, but I guess the tomatoes in our garden could be considered organic.
I don't know. It depends on what you put in your soil. Don't get too carried away.
I put dirt in my soil.
I checked out at Walmart up here, and I was checking out, and the cashier goes, oh, hold on just a second, these are different. I was like, what? I was getting bananas. I said, what's different about them? They're just bananas. She goes, well, these are organic, so I gotta ring them up differently. I said, they are? She goes, yeah, there's a special section over there. You must have grabbed one of the organic ones. I'm like, oh. I was like, well, what's different about them? She goes, they just don't last as long. Okay.
Yep.
Sure enough.
That's pretty much accurate.
Well, whatever. You live in Missouri. You live in the farmland, heartland, pretty much everything around you is organic, so you don't worry about it too much.
I imagine so. So, Mr. Reynolds, where do we want to start tonight?
Well, the Cardinals have a 5-0 lead against the Dodgers.
Like that.
There's kind of, I don't know, am I the only one that feels like against a starting pitcher like Rich Hill, they should have had more? He was all over the place, and I don't want to be negative about it. I mean, I'm happy with what they produced, but it took an error in the outfield to get at least two of those runs. You could argue three. And the way he was pitching when Colton Wong had that two RBI hit, you kind of feel like they probably should have scored a few more, and instead they left the bases loaded that inning. So. Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of mixed on how I feel about this team right now. I'm sure a lot of people are mixed about them, but I guess that's where I would start is what is your general sense of a team that, like the Cardinals right now, who started so horrendously, then had an incredibly impressive stretch, and now in the midst of this terrifying 18-game stretch that'll end with playing the Cubs, for a weekend series again. How do you feel about this team right now?
I don't know what to think, really, beyond what I've always felt. I was looking at some numbers, actually, of how the Cardinals have played in May, and they're, like, 12th in offense. They're first in rotation ERA, and they're fifth in bullpen ERA, which that one surprised me because, you know, when you've got Brett Cecil and Jonathan Broxton out there, that's not exactly what you're expecting. But overall, you know, pitching's been great. Pitching's mostly been how I expected, even though, mm-hmm. you know, allowing for the possibility that the pitching staff was not going to be as good as I expected it to be. The offense has been about what I expected it to be. We've still got the same problems. The Cardinals are really good at getting guys on base, really bad at getting them in. I feel like they just fight and claw and scratch for everything. And you never feel like they're comfortable going into a game. I don't know that I could sit there and go into a game and say, you know, the Cardinals are going to win this one. Just because you never know what Cardinals team you're gonna get on a given night.
Yeah, and by comparison to that, I think that's a great point. I mean, to touch on how you feel about this team going into each game night to night, by comparison, you know, let's say you compare them to the 2014, for example, a team that you just felt like every night, even if they were down by four runs, I just remember sitting there thinking to myself in the fifth, sixth inning, you know, there's going to come an explosive inning. There's going to come some sort of inning where they're going to put together some doubles, a home run or two, something, and they're going to jump back in this and take the lead. And more often than not, they did. With this team, you kind of get the sense that you're just grateful for every inning that the other team doesn't score. You're grateful for every run you do score. I'm grateful for the solo home run Yadier Molina just hit. So now the Cardinals
spoiler alert
to nothing.
so he's still at bat on my screen.
Oh, it ends well. So you know, it's really dull. You don't know what to expect from the team night to night. You get the sense that they're just hanging in there until they can either be presented with a permanent solution out of nowhere. Maybe it's a bat from AAA, or maybe it's a bat from another organization or whatever. Or Mozeliak can, like, they're just kind of waiting for Mozeliak to turn over the roster in July and pull off some sort of multiplayer deal that changes the look of the team. I don't know. But, you know, and speaking of that, speaking of roster construction, you know, you mentioned the bullpen is better statistically than you would have expected. You know, you hear a lot of people complaining about the number of pitchers that Matheny and Mozeliak are carrying on this team. I guess I'm one of the guys that's not too upset about it. And the reason I say that is because I think the ability to say, I'm going to go to this guy, then this guy, then this guy, then this guy, maybe one of the only things keeping the bullpen afloat until they can get to a point where they have Cecil pitching like Cecil. They can figure out what they want to do with a Matt Bowman on a regular basis. But, you know, really, the situation they're in right now, if they didn't have that number of pitchers in the bullpen, what they're looking at is there's going to be a few effective guys. There's going to be the Bowmans, the Rosenthals, the O's, whatever, when they're pitching well, that Matheny's going to ride. And he's going to ride them and ride them and ride them because he's still got a handful of relief pitchers that are either unreliable or unpredictable. And the only thing that's potentially saving their bullpen is the fact that he has enough options to be able to spread those innings around a little bit, I think. And I think that's probably what you're going to be looking at for a while until they get some guys like Cecil right.
Yeah, absolutely. Somebody pointed that out to me on Twitter the other day, and I was like, you know, I really don't mind the Cardinals carrying 13 pitchers. And, I mean, mostly I wish they were the right 13 pitchers because I'd much rather see, you know, a guy like Tui Valila up instead of Broxton. but I really don't see that extra hitter anywhere in the organization that's really going to, you know – who is going to be up that's going to really make that difference? And, you know, as much as the most people would immediately respond with Sierra, eventually the hot streak is going to end, and it's better to be ahead of time. And, yeah, where does he play? Who does he force out? And I think a lot of people just think that's easy to answer when you're judging, you know, purely based on production standpoint. But there is more to all of that.
The easy answer, I mean, just to go down the Sierra rabbit hole for just a second, the easy answer is Grichuk. You don't really know what you're going to get out of Grichuk night to night. He's up right. He's up at the plate right now, so it's easy to talk about him. But there are nights where he just looks like he couldn't hit the broadside of a barn, and then there are nights when everything he hits goes to the wall. You know, the problem is the Cardinals are still committed to Grichuk in the outfield, and they probably should be, because you still don't know what you have. But at the same time, let's say for a second that the Cardinals are willing to end their Grichuk exploration trial period. And pulling from the lineup and start sharing time with Sierra. The problem you have then is you just signed a big free agent in Dexter Fowler specifically to play center field. And the best place for Sierra to play is center field. So now you're going to what? You're going to take your franchise, one of your franchise players all of a sudden for the next 5 years, and move him in the first year of his contract to a corner outfield position in favor of a 21-year-old. You know, it's not going to work as well as people think it will. And if he's not, and if Sierra's not going to get everyday developmental at bats at the major league level, then he needs to be in the minor leagues.
Yeah. I agree. So ultimately it just goes back to, I don't see that player in Memphis or wherever that's going to make that difference for the offense. Really what needs to happen is we need to find that franchise-altering hitter, which now that, you know, they missed out on Luis Robert, I don't see anywhere where the Cardinals are going to end up with one.
No. And the ascendance of Jed Jerko this year so far, I'll tell you when the roster gets really interesting.
No.
The roster gets interesting on August 1st if Randall Grichuk is still hitting the way he's hitting, which is to say he's not hitting a lot. If he still looks like he does now on August 1st, and if Jed Jerko still looks like he does now on August 1st, the roster suddenly gets very interesting, because the best place for the Cardinals to acquire a franchise player is at third base. I don't think it happens at the trade deadline this year. It's just going to be too expensive in prospects, considering the free agents that could be available in the next couple of years. But I think there's a better chance for the Cardinals to go into free agency and pursue someone. However, even if they did have a shot at someone like a Donaldson, or someone like that, you know, you've got a situation where Jerko is the best hitter on your team right now, and he's your cleanup hitter, and he's doing a fine job at third base. There's absolutely no reason to acquire a third baseman if Jerko still looks like Jerko at the end of July. But at the same time, on August 1st, if everything is holding true right now in August, you've got a situation where Randall Grichuk is very vulnerable to someone like, say, Harrison Bader, who could come up from AAA. He's hitting around around 300 most of the season. He's only gotten better as you track him. He's gone from, say, 265 to closer to 300. He hits for power. He has a lot of the consistent approach and swing that you like out of guys like, say, Piscotty on a good day. But I'll tell you, it's going to get real interesting if Grichuk is still playing the way he is today in August and Harrison Bader is still hitting in AAA, because then I think you could see the Cardinals at playoff push time very tempted to bring Bader up and see what he could do at the major league level before the end of the minor league season.
Yeah, it would be, and here's just a random thought I had, because I was reading an article about the Blue Jays, specifically trading Donaldson. And they really outlined, you know, that the Blue Jays really have a lot of the foundation structure of a team that, you know, could make a few minor adjustments and, you know, turn into a contender again. Which our discussion just kind of got me thinking, you know, if Jerko's still hitting come the summer and Grichuk's not quite where you want him to be, do you think about trading, seeing if you could do some package around Grichuk and Wong for Donaldson?
And you're talking
and have those two guys at the core. Because you figure Grichuk's power would play phenomenally in the AL East.
I think the Cardinals could be more apt to trade Jerko himself in that scenario than they would Wong. If for no other reason than their contract situation. I mean, you're looking at a guy in Jerko who's going to be making Matt Holliday money in a couple of years. And he's having a great year this year. This is the first year he's had a year like that. Before then, he's been pretty much a one-dimensional player. Whereas they've always believed in who Colton Wong is supposed to be, and Colton Wong is showing he can probably be that this year, and he profiles more like a second baseman. And conceivably, one of the reasons the Cardinals would go after someone like Donaldson or someone like Machado or Arenado at some point or whoever becomes available. Gosh, I wish the Rockies were a lot worse than they are. You know, the idea is to get someone who you know you can count on to be a franchise-level player for many years to come, or at least in Donaldson's case, 2 or 3 years to come. You know, Jerko has not shown that he is that yet. He's having a good year. That's all we really know to this point. I'm still amazed that anyone ever throws a man a fastball. I don't understand what Major League scouts are seeing when they scout Jed Jerko, but it's working out for the Cardinals, whatever they're doing. I don't know if Jerko has changed his approach and he's wearing contact lenses that eliminate anything slower than 89 miles an hour or what, but you know, the bottom line, I think, is you can't count on Jerko to be a franchise-level player. They've already committed to the idea that Wong can be that without actually fully committing to Wong himself yet, the person. I can see, long story short, I can see them trading someone like Jerko before they traded someone like Wong if they were going to acquire a franchise-level player at third base.
Yeah. I mean, it's possible. I just kind of was putting it together because two guys who, you know, still have pretty good upside, still have plenty of years of team control left, and are pieces that a team like Toronto could use right now to try to win next year. While the Cardinals at least buy a ticket to buy them some time. That's one of my big complaints, is people talk about, hey, Mo's just waiting for Manny Machado. And I'm like, yeah, but we have a year and a half until he becomes a free agent. I'm not comfortable with the team just sitting on their hands and being okay being mediocre for that time.
Right. I think maybe, you know, honestly, Jed Jerko playing as well as he is really complicating the situation because, you know, the question came up in our UCB roundtable earlier in the year, if you remember, who's going to be playing third base? Was that you that asked that question?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't think so, but I remember that question well.
Yeah, and my thought from the very beginning, I mean, and by beginning, I mean November, my thought was Matt Carpenter's going to be playing third base after the trade deadline in August. You know, knowing the Cardinals were planning on playing him at first base. And my reasoning was Jurco has never shown yet that he's been able to hold on to a starting position job for a full season. And the Cardinals are going to have to address the fact that they don't have a bona fide franchise-level, terrifyingly powerful hitter in the middle of the order. And the reality is it's usually easier to acquire a hitter like that at first base than it is third base. And so I fully anticipated at the beginning of the season that Matt Carpenter was going to end up getting moved back to third base just because it was going to be easier for the Cardinals to upgrade their lineup by acquiring a power-hitting first baseman for the short term. And then, you know, if they wanted to go after a Machado in a year or so to play third base and move Carpenter back across, so be it. But now, with Jurco playing so well, I mean, you almost really need a prolonged slump by him for them to consider doing something like that. Because you still have the problem of where to play Matt Carpenter. If the Cardinals want to upgrade at third, they've got to consider moving Jurco out of third, either by moving him out of the organization or moving him across the diamond somewhere, in which case you have Colton Wong and Matt Carpenter sitting over there. And, you know, maybe, as I say this, maybe the easiest path here is if Grichuk's not hitting, you acquire a first baseman, you stick Carpenter in left field. I don't know if that's something the club is really looking actively to do because they've been hesitant to play Carpenter in the outfield already. But I think bottom line is I think their options, if Jurco's playing well at third, their options for upgrading this lineup are extremely limited in July. And I don't think if they're looking to upgrade because Grichuk is not hitting, I don't think Grichuk's going to be a viable trade piece. I think if you're going to trade for somebody like a Donaldson, you're looking at moving somebody like Jurco for exactly the reason you were talking about, because it gives Toronto somebody they can retool with and play with next year and contend with. But you're also going to have to package him with someone more attractive than Grichuk. You're going to have to give them a reason to make the trade because otherwise they're just trading Donaldson for Jurco.
Yeah, I mean, there definitely needs to be a sweet point. And overall, I mean, even if you get a year like, say, last year, or even something more average at a Jurco, you know, as long as he keeps playing defense like he has since he arrived in St. Louis, I'm okay with him just being what he's been through his career. Because that surprised the heck out of me that I figured looking at his defensive stats that it would be like a unicorn season, like Peralta had his first year here, and that we'd see the real one show up. But he's hitting the blazes out of the ball. He's playing great defense at third base. It's like, I don't understand any of this. And that's a lot of why I love baseball.
Although he had another one of those boots at third base tonight that, skipped off what kind of those mysterious errors where he almost looks confused at how the ball is coming up on him so fast, being a primarily a career second baseman and shortstop. You know, he looks at times like the ball is getting on him a little bit faster than he's used to at third. That happened tonight when it skipped off to Diaz at short. I'll go the other direction. If Jurco is the hitter later in the season that he was last year, the Cardinals have got to upgrade it at third base. I don't think they can live with the hitter that he was last year. Not because that hitter last year was bad, but because of who else they have on the infield, who they have at center field and right field, who they have in the farm system in the outfield, and where they can upgrade the lineup. And I just feel like if Jurco is the hitter that he was last year, that's a great piece, but it's not the kind of hitter they're going to need to anchor their lineup at, say, cleanup or whatever, wherever they're going to be. If he's the hitter he is now, they can sit and wait and see what happens. And his salary is still palatable next season. He gets a raise, I think, $2 or $3 million after this year. But after next year, he's on borrowed time. I mean, the Cardinals are not going to pay him $17 million a year, which is what he's headed for here in the next couple of years.
No, I think they only owe him like 13 or not 13, like 16 or 17. After you counter what the Padres are paying him over the next 2 years, so.
Yeah, but I think in that last year,
it's not quite
I think that Padres money. I have to look it up and go get it from my computer. But I was thinking in that last year, the Padres money kind of disappears. But that you're right for this year and next year. But and I may be thinking about the option year, but I want to say that last year, because his last year he's slated to get $17 million. The year after that, he's got the option for another $17 million. And I was thinking the Padres money ran out for that last year that was not the option year. That the Cardinals would be on the hook for the full $17 million.
Let's see, he's due $9 million next year, $13 million in 2019, and the option in 2020 is for $13 million. And Kotz doesn't have a breakdown of when when San Diego's payments are, but I believe it's like 2, 2.5, and 3. Broken down over the last 3 years of the deal, so
they are.
So they really only owe them $16-17 million over the next 2 years, which isn't bad.
No, if that's right, then that's not bad. But at the same time, I don't think the Cardinals want to pay it if they have a better option. He's going to have to be the hitter he is now for the long term. I don't think if he's a hitter last year. Going forward, I think he's going to be vulnerable. And only because the Cardinals have to upgrade their lineup. And I think if he's the hitter he was last season, going forward, then I think that makes him the vulnerable piece to get upgraded. Not that he would be doing a bad job, not that he wouldn't be producing, but it just, you look around the diamond, you go, well, if they're committed to Wong and they're not going to move Carpenter and, especially if they're committed to Diaz at shortstop, and they've talked about moving him to third and acquiring a shortstop. But again, that you're still talking about Jed Jerko moving. I just feel like if they're going to upgrade, it makes Jerko vulnerable.
Yeah, I mean, my big problem really with Jerko is he's never really been a good run producer type of player. That's really why I don't like him in the number four spot. I mean, that is a strike against him in my book, anyway. But
I don't mind him in the four spot just because he's been hitting so well lately. I don't understand why the man can't hit a home run with men on base. That's kind of weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't get that.
Like 37 home runs since he arrived in St. Louis, and what, like 30 of them have been solo shots, something like that?
Mm-hmm. See, this is what happens when we do the show late and I'm tired. $13 million. God, I don't know why I was thinking $17 million.
You want to give Jed Jerko $17 million. I mean, he's probably not complaining.
That's what happens, man. You get late. I'm an old man now.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's not easy to stay up.
I'll probably watch some movies when we get off.
How about your expectations with the team and how they've measured up?
You and I talked about how at the beginning of the season, how the Cubs pitching staff was not going to hold up like it did last year. We've already seen that happen. We talked about how if that happens, then the Cardinals don't have as much competition. I don't think the Brewers are going to hold up. They're an exciting team now, but they kind of remind me of the Brewers when Prince Fielder and Ryan Braun were first breaking into the league, and they were a dangerous team. The Cardinals had to contend with them, and they were spoilers, but they weren't quite ready yet. I think expectations-wise, the Cardinals themselves are not – living up to not only what they expected of themselves, but what I expected of them as a as a team on the field. I expected cleaner baseball. I expected better decisions on the base paths. And I think because I expected the Cardinals and Mike Matheny specifically to work harder on those areas in the offseason and in spring training. And it's I kind of briefly rambled off some words. I called it a quick thought today on the blog, but it was really a lazy thought because I didn't want to put in the research time before getting the thought out there. But, you know, it just kind of seems like there is some – I call it a muddled message, but maybe it's just a superficial message. Matheny wants to go out there and say, I want the guys to play aggressive baseball. I want the guys to push for the extra base and take the extra base and run when they can and make the aggressive play when it's presented and all of that. It doesn't seem like he's specifically translating that to, okay, Matt Carpenter, here's the specific way I want you to be aggressive. I want you to do it this way, not that way. And when you do it the wrong way, I'm going to come to you and I'm going to hold you accountable and I'm going to specifically correct you. But here we are days later and Matt Carpenter still thinks he made the right decision to stretch a double to a triple. To me, that is proof, especially based on what Matheny's saying in the media, that's proof that Mike Matheny is not going to his players and specifically discussing those plays with them directly and with some level of accountability. And that, as I thought about that today, it matches with what else we've heard about Matheny as a manager, that he goes around, he kind of vaguely checks in with guys, he gets reports from medical staff and whatever, and all that's well and good. But, and he, you know, he's open to bringing data into the scenario and in the discussion. But he doesn't seem to be a guy that wants to directly go to a player, and he can call it whatever he wants to. He can say, I respect them enough, they're a better guy, they know what they're doing, whatever. And I think he even said he knows. When asked about Matt Carpenter, I think he said he knows, implying that he knows he shouldn't have done that, and so I don't need to say anything to him. But clearly you do. Clearly.
Yeah. Carpenter there in the media doubling down on, yeah, I did the right thing.
Yeah, I mean, clearly. So bottom line for me is, I feel like the message that Matheny wants to deliver to the team is not specific enough and is not direct enough. And he needs to become more direct and more specific and be willing to be the bad guy if need be in the clubhouse and let the veterans handle the aftermath of a Matheny confrontation. And I think that's kind of what you used to see with La Russa, and this happens all the time with us. Matheny's always compared to La Russa. And that's going to be the way it is for his entire career.
It's always going to be.
Yep, exactly. But with La Russa, La Russa would allow the veterans to handle the clubhouse. And that was for a very specific reason, I felt like. It was so that La Russa could come in and be the heavy and directly confront a player in some specific manner like that. And then leave the room and the veterans could step in and go, okay, now let's pick up the pieces. And I don't know that Matheny can do that right now. I think he's got to learn, but right now I feel like he's concerned enough about being respected and being a leader of the team and making sure that the team follows him and not losing them that I think he's, I don't want to use the word afraid because I don't know that Matheny's ever afraid of anything, but for lack of a better word, I think he's afraid to directly confront his players specifically and say, this is what you did wrong, at least some of the players, like a Matt Carpenter. This is what you specifically did wrong. You need to correct it. And by the way, I hope the rest of you are listening to me when I confront him because it's going to be you next if you do the same thing. This is not what we do. In that scenario, second base was good enough. In the other scenarios, Yadier Molina stayed in first base. He'd been picked off and thrown out twice in two or three games, both in situations where we could have really used a base runner and a run. I just feel like he's asked the guys to be generally and vaguely aggressive, but he's not being specific enough about what that means, and he's certainly not holding them directly accountable when they don't do it the way they need to do it. And for me, that just basically means the message is somehow getting muddled between Matheny's mouth and the player's ears, and that's something that's got to get corrected. And I felt like I expected it to be corrected, and I expected the team to play better than they have this year.
Yeah, I
got nothing else to add.
Because I use too many words. I use so many words that cover everything. It's like the monkeys writing Shakespeare.
Yeah. Well, with probably. Nope. What you got?
Oh, just with that, I think we both expected the team to play cleaner baseball, and we're just thankful that they're still in the position where they can contend.
Yeah. It's one of those things where I don't understand. I mean, as someone who considers that they've got a fairly high baseball IQ, I just don't understand how players can continually make the same mistakes and not go, you know, maybe I should stop doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't get it. But
yeah, and the tricky thing is, you know, when you hear somebody like Matt Carpenter explain their thinking, their thought process, it makes a certain amount of sense. You know, I read the story today where he said, I would have done the same thing over again. I did the right thing. I just didn't make it. I wouldn't have gone if I didn't think I could go. And we were having a hard time scoring runs and blah, blah, blah. And if I get to third, then an error and a wild pitch or anything or a sack fly can score me. I get all that. All that makes sense. But that's where you need a manager to step in and say specifically to him, I get all that. I'm telling you that's not what we're going to do. Stop doing it. Let the roster play its way out, play its way to a win when you get a leadoff double in that scenario. Just stop it. There's all kinds of ways that these guys, like you said, these guys have high baseball IQ. They've been playing the game for years at many different levels, some of them for many different teams. They can justify any decision or move they make on the field, but it doesn't always mean they're all moving in the same direction with the same team philosophy. That's where the manager's got to step in and say, look, I understand you have reasoning for what you do. I'm telling you this is what I want you to do, regardless of whatever your reasoning is. And that's where he's got to get specific enough and say, look, I trust you to be a smart ball player. There's a lot of ways to be a smart ball player, and you can justify just about anything you do on the field. But I'm telling you this is what I want you to do, and I need to specifically address that with you. And that's not happening.
No. No, it's not. There's seemingly a lot of communication issues there.
I feel like before we end the show, we should at least say, you and I both said Matt Adams was going to have a breakout year, but we did not say which team he was going to have a breakout year for.
I know. I actually went and I checked tonight, and no additional home run, but he did have a triple.
A triple. That's more impressive.
Yep.
Come on.
I was looking at it, and I was okay, he went 1-for-5. Uh-huh. Looking at the notes underneath, total bases, Matt Adams, 3. Wait, that means he got a, triple.
Yeah.
A few years ago, I swear, like, his full season for the Cardinals, he led the team in triples that year.
I remember him getting a lot of triples. I don't know if I remember him leading the team in triples, but I was going to pay Jed Jerko $17 million a year just a few minutes ago, so what do I know?
2014, yeah, he had 5 triples, the same number as Peter Borges, to lead the team.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, this team's going to be interesting to watch this year just because I don't think anybody knows what kind of team they are yet. And I go back and forth between saying they have no business being where they are in the standings to they have no business being this low in the standings. And I don't know what to make of them. And, you know, talking about this stretch, I touched on this a few minutes ago, or a little while ago, this stretch that started with the Red Sox, I mean, this is a brutal 18-game stretch that goes from the Red Sox to the Giants, the Dodgers, the Rockies, and ends with the Cubs. And you think, my goodness, I mean, if they can make it through this, and I kind of threw something like that out there on Twitter, and one of the Twitter users responded with, I predict 13-5. I just remember thinking, I don't think you know this team at all. I'm as optimistic as the next guy, and I love my team, but my goodness, there's nothing to indicate that the the Cardinals were going to play this list of opponents at a 13-5 clip for 18 games. I just didn't see it.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, we know the Cardinals aren't a bad team, but I don't know that we know that they're a good team, which makes it incredibly difficult on the GM, you know, as you go into the summer. It's like, well, what is this team? Is this a hand that I go all in on? You know, and I like to use the poker reference a lot with him because, you know, he likes to he plays it safe, and it's like, yeah, it's exactly that. It's like, is this the hand that you push in on? And, you know, right now this team really isn't telling him, giving him the signals that, yeah, we're the team you push in on. We're the team you say, this, we've got a shot, and you need to do everything you can to make sure we have our best shot.
And I think that's a great question to ask. Like, how in do you go with this team? Because right now they're probably a third place team playing a little bit above their station. But here's the thing. I would not, because of the competition in this division and because of the competition in the National League for the postseason, I would not go all in on this team. But I, specifically because I want to hold my chips until the Cardinals see what's going to be available in the free agent market and in the trade market over the next couple of years at third base, specifically at third base. They have to find a franchise-defining player, and third base is the best place to go. So I think they have to hold some of their prospects, especially not having draft picks in the upper rounds this year. So I wouldn't go all in. But I would say, considering the pitching staff, the starting pitching staff that this team has, it's worth it to spend a few prospects and get enough help to where you feel like you've given them the roster to get over that second-place hump. Because I think, you know as well as I do, once they get the postseason, it's kind of a coin toss to see how far they go. And if there's any indicator of how far they can go in the postseason, it's how good a starting pitching staff they have. So I don't think they're an all-in team, but I do think they're worth spending a little bit of the Cardinals' resources to make enough improvements that they can contend. And I think that's probably what you'll see Mozeliak do at the trade deadline.
Yeah, find just a way to shore it up a little bit, which will frustrate everybody.
Why didn't you get fill-in-the-blank player?
Why didn't you trade that Adams for Mike Trout?
Why didn't you give them the entire Double-A roster for this guy?
Yeah.
That'd be great.
So, we should probably head towards wrapping it up. What do you got going on?
You know, end of the school year, all kinds of stuff with the kids have kept me busy. So, just kind of trickling out some blog posts now, and hopefully in the next couple of weeks, things will pick back up to their normal level again. So I'm just trying to kind of get a handle on this team. I feel like I've written a lot of negative articles, and I'm trying to kind of turn the page and write some more either neutral or positive pieces. But, gosh, this team, they need to give me more material. So I don't know.
Yeah.
What do you got going? You faring any better?
I'm writing a lot. At least as far as track record, but in comparison, I'm writing a lot. I got my five things that I'm doing with every series. Just five things I'm seeing and thinking about through each series. And along with columns every week or so as they hit me. I've got about three of them that I want to write, but unfortunately I think two of them are going to kind of time out on me.
Almost like the show.
Yeah, exactly, because we're about to time out. So that seems like a great time to say goodnight. And we'll see you next time.
Good night.